Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's a Tuesday afternoon on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for tuning in. And as you do, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 117 points at 19,900 and I think about 15. And that's all thanks to John Najarian, who is on the phone line with us now. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Wonderful to be with you as usual, Steve.
All right,
Thank you.
Are we going to cross 20,000 before the year is over?
Yes.
How about before the show's over?
Well, that's possible. there are an awful lot of shorts, meaning people that sold the market in hopes of buying it back at cheaper prices, that have been contributing to the rally. And then you've got some of the actual fiscal policies that people are betting on, things like lower taxes, infrastructure spending, rolling back of regulations and things that are contributing in a major way to the upside that we've seen over the past, well, since the election.
There's this blogger named Macro Man. I don't know if you see him at all. I was reading about him, and he looked at what happens after elections before presidents take office. So a new president, in this case, a new President Trump, between his winning of the election and inauguration day, the average is a loss of 1.7% for the Dow. If you're an incumbent president, it tends to go up 1.4, but down 1.7. The S&P so far is up more than 5% since Donald Trump's election. The Dow up 7.8%. And he points out, I don't think Trump would like this, that he's approaching the level of Herbert Hoover. I guess it was a double-digit increase after Hoover's election. It didn't go so well a little bit later for Herbert, but I don't think we should take any signs from that.
Yeah, hopefully not. We definitely rather not have a repeat of the Great Depression, that's for sure.
No one's pulling for that.
Right, and that's one of the things, you know. Ben Bernanke famously is an expert on the Great Depression. It's one of the reasons that he applied as much stimulus as he could. He could, of course, not provide the other stimulus that I spoke of. He could only provide the quantitative easing and taking down interest rates and things like that. That's all the tools the Fed really has had up until now, and the Congress and the president have to do the rest as far as repealing tax and regulation.
And the president-elect is putting together his team to do that. I want to talk about a couple of the selections, but first this in Trump Tower today. Donald Trump and Kanye West.
Just friends, and he's a good man. Doing well. Long time. We've been friends for a long time.
So what do you make of that, John Najarian? Kanye West dropping in on Donald Trump.
There was a lot of suspicion as to what cabinet post he might be appointed to.
Yeah.
Drug czar was the one that came to most people's minds. but, of course, perhaps performing for the inaugural. Also, the potential that he's just being questioned as far as what he thought there could be to bridge gaps between constituents, even though he was a supporter, I guess, of the president later in the cycle. I don't believe he was at first. Steve, here's a funny one for you. I was flying out here to New York for the show today, and on the plane we had in-and-out Wi-Fi, meaning it was coming in and out. So all I heard was that Condi Rice and Gates had endorsed Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State. And since I knew that Bill Gates was going to the Trump Tower, I thought it was Bill Gates. It turns out it was
Bob
not
Gates.
Bill Gates. It was Bob Gates that had endorsed him. But I got to tell everybody on CNBC it was great that Bill Gates even endorsed him.
Well, you know,
so that's the danger
of intermittent internet. We have talked throughout this ordeal about the fact, you know, and you would say often that Hillary Clinton was the favorite candidate of Wall Street. Now that Donald Trump is the president-elect, he seems to be leaning on Wall Street pretty heavily. I mean, do you change your opinion?
Especially on Goldman Sachs pretty heavily. Nobody will move faster than, I believe, if you're part of Wall Street, nobody will move faster than you as far as seeing which way the winds are blowing. And you're certainly not going to stand in the way of a wind that's going to be there for at least 4 years. You're going to try to fix your sails to take advantage of that. And obviously, I do have a lot of respect for many of the men and women who work in our business,
sure,
especially those at Morgan Stanley, J.P. Morgan, and Goldman Sachs. And I guess it's Goldman Sachs yet again that's getting the opportunity to assist the president-elect, as many of their predecessors have done with presidents in the past, from Clinton and Bush all the way now through to Mr. Trump.
Let's talk Exxon, though, and Tillerson.
Sure.
And as a leader of state, the guy who is a CEO of Exxon, this huge multinational corporation, I mean, how is that viewed from the business world? I would think that that would be embraced.
Yes, it is very much embraced, because the negatives that have been thrown out against him were that he was a deal maker, in particular had some good relationships with Russia. Russia is a supplier, of course, of crude oil. And so if he has a good relationship with them, it's much like Walmart would have with any of its suppliers. You want to cut a good deal, both sides. The buyer wants a lower price. The seller wants the higher price. If you can negotiate that and still be friends, that doesn't seem like a bad business decision to me.
I would rather go into a situation with someone who knows and likes the adversary rather than someone who's already decided they don't.
Exactly. And I think this could be something that's very good for the relationship that the United States has with many of the folks in energy production. Obviously, Russia did side with OPEC in the recent cut, but nonetheless, the natural resources are what Russia and Canada are all about. So those are natural resource economies driven by the price of crude and so forth. Having a good relationship with each of those, but in particular a superpower like Russia, seems like that's a good thing for me, for the United States.
John, I've got less than 30 seconds, but do you have a quick stock tip for us today?
Sure. Coca-Cola. They changed some leadership in the company last week. They announced that change. This week we see a lot of institutional money flowing back in there. As I just said on TV, I still like Pepsi a little better, but there's no reason you can't have both. Coke has water as well as their sugary products and diet products, but there's somebody betting pretty big that the stock goes considerably higher. I like that, so I bought it today for our clients.
Not a bad Tuesday routine. You can watch John Najarian on CNBC and then tune in to listen to him on the Business Lunch. Thanks very much for joining us today, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate you having me on.
Follow John at John Najarian. It's 12:23. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Suzanne Buchan will be here after a check of the news headlines, and we'll talk Girl Scouts and then Songfinch later in the program. But right now, Louis Lazar writes for the Chicago Business Journal and stops by from time to time, is in the studio. Louis, I'll bring that microphone a little closer to you. Thank you. I like just when you're on in weather like this, I like to just watch out the window for you to cross the Michigan Avenue Bridge.
I keep moving, that's for sure.
You made it. I'm glad you did. Hey, tell me about this study. I want to talk about airlines because you write quite a lot about that. But there also was this study by Resonance, right, which looked at cities around the world and sort of ranked them by brand.
Right.
Chicago came in. Well, they were in the top 20, right?
They just scraped in under the top 20, 19th position.
Right. And so that's not so good.
Well, I mean, it could have been worse. I guess you can look at the glass half full approach. But no, it's not great, at least by the way Rahm Emanuel keeps talking about how we are the world-class city that everybody else is trying to catch up with.
Well, so number 20 was Rome, so it's nice to be ahead of Rome.
Right.
Number 18 was Houston.
Right.
I don't want to be behind Houston in anything.
Well, but they're catching up with us in population, so we have to be aware of whatever they're up to.
What is it about Houston that...
Well, I think it's got, if you like hot weather, it's definitely a place you want to consider moving to.
Okay, give me something else.
And I don't think they've got any crime issues, which, of course, is a huge thing dragging down us in the brand rankings. I mean, that was a big problem in the way when they were just started ranking Chicago. And I mean, aside from the energy situation there, because they are so heavily into the energy industry there, that has been a problem for them in terms of employment. But pretty much every other way, I think Houston ranks pretty well.
You can look at the bottom of the top 100 and see that Detroit came in 98, which
is something. Detroit did make the listing.
I was going to say it's almost an accomplishment.
Right. You'd have to almost look at it that way.
No one flies to Detroit, but You fly. I was interested to read this article you put where you achieved on Southwest Airlines their highest status, A1 or 1A?
A-list preferred. It's the preferred that makes the big distinction.
Which means you were on a Southwest plane more than 50 times last year.
So far. I will probably hit, I'll be close to 60 by the time the year is out.
What did it get you?
It got me a 100% bonus points every time I fly in 2017. I'll get double the automatic points I would get for whatever that flight was worth. And then I'll get free Wi-Fi on the plane. And although I'm disputing this with Southwest Press Department, I supposedly a little higher ranking when I board the plane. I'll get on a little earlier, but I haven't seen that in the couple of trips I've taken since I reached the
state. Did you choose Southwest because of its service or because of its destination?
Because of the destination. I was going to be flying a lot between Chicago and Nashville. And,
right.
And because they do fly larger jets, that's one thing they have an advantage. Too many of the bigger carriers like United and American are flying regional jets to those markets, and I need the bigger flights, bigger planes, because I'm a slightly claustrophobic.
But Southwest did come out in the recent on-time studies, right, just behind Delta again.
Right.
They've been good,
but that's a very volatile ranking situation. I mean, they can be up and down. Weather is a huge factor in that.
So I think the last time we were here, you were telling me about the uniform situation with American Airlines. And that was before, I mean, yours was the first story I saw on it.
Well, I've been covering for 2.5 months.
It keeps growing. And now Erin Brockovich is involved?
Well, I think any day now, she's definitely monitoring the site where all the flight attendants are posting these horrendously graphic images of all the reactions they're having to the uniform. And I think she's still in this evidence collecting mode, and I think when she's reached a critical mass of that, she will make her decision.
So these new uniforms come out, employees are getting rashes, itches,
hives,
things like that.
Breathing. And really some of the worst things you have to do. They're on flights and suddenly they can't breathe. It's like a cotton has been stuffed down their throat. I mean, I just hear all these horrendous every day. It's more and more.
Are we any closer to knowing what caused it?
No. Not that I'm aware. The testing goes on, but it's been pointed out to me because the one thing they can't really test well for is when the flight attendants are in flight and in that pressurized environment how it's interacting with their bodies. Everybody's body is different and all the chemicals in the uniform. So there's a lot of variables here, and it's very complicated.
I know you've been watching that, and I know you'll continue. Can't wait for the next time you come by.
Right.
And now we'll all watch you walk across the bridge again.
Thank you.
Louis Lazar heading back to the Chicago Business Journal. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1236 in the afternoon. Suzanne Muchen is the co-host of The Big Payoff at WGNplus.com and talks about women in the workplace, women in society from time to time here on the Biz Lunch. And this is one of those times. Welcome back.
Thanks. I think that Michael must be mad because I didn't get my Suzanne song.
Oh, that's right. He forgot. You know what? He just told me he's going on vacation tomorrow. So
he's got vacation head.
He's not even here.
I'm recovering.
So Rex Tillerson named today as the Secretary of State nominee, big Boy Scout. He headed the Boy Scouts when they opened up to gay kids, and is an Eagle Scout himself. On the other side, Girl Scouts. Well, is it the other side? That's an interesting, right? We compare one to the other.
Right.
Girl Scouts are kind of changing their image a little bit.
They're rebranding.
Yeah.
But were you a Boy Scout?
No. My son, I was a Cub Scout leader for a time.
As an adult, but no, not as a kid, nothing?
No, I was not one of those guys.
Yeah, I was a Brownie, but then I got kicked out.
Really?
Yeah.
No one's surprised by that.
I did get kicked out for doing something with a kiln, like a clay making kiln.
Okay.
That's for another show.
Right. Well, I thought you were heading toward kilt.
No, KILN.
Okay,
like I did something I shouldn't have done while using clay. Okay.
Okay.
Troop 145, no longer. That said, the Girl Scouts are rebranding, and what's interesting is we all have come to know them for one of two things. Either these badges that they wear for sewing and home ec, and that was sort of the 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The cookies, which, do you know how much money per year?
How much?
$800 million.
Wow. And I like the peanut butter sandwich ones that no one else likes.
Yeah, no one likes those. These are, I mean, primarily it's the mint.
Thin mint.
The thin mint that we all love and put in the freezer. But they're rebranding in an effort to try to bring the Girl Scouts into the, you know, 21st century, focusing them more on the skills they're calling their girl initiative. I actually like these words, go-getters, innovators, risk-takers, and leaders.
Yeah.
That's a good use of words.
Okay, so.
And it, I'll just leave you with this thought that the question really is, can you rebrand the Girl Scouts? Can you really make them into something that we all perceive as being a little old-fashioned?
My wife, the lovely wife, Sharon, was a Girl Scout leader.
Yeah.
Brownie leader into Girl Scouts, I think. Emma was in Girl Scouts. Tell me those words again.
So, go-getters, innovators, risk-takers, leaders.
I think that absolutely applied to the stuff she was doing.
I think so. I was ready to not like the words because you just know how long they thought about them before they chose them. They're good words.
Except for risk-taker. Maybe they didn't push risk-taker.
Maybe they didn't push that quite enough. But I think what they are trying to do, and I did see this the last time they were in their mode of selling the cookies, they're pushing entrepreneurship. They're really trying to get the girls to see themselves as burgeoning, emerging business women or entrepreneurs or leaders, which I actually think is great. I wanted to not like it because I'm usually really critical of this stuff.
Right.
I thought it was solid. And I'll also say that I think that they're hitting the right chord because there's Girls That Code and all these other groups that are attempting to get, you know, run like a girl and all that. I think they're fitting into that messaging.
Okay. You're no more about marketing than I do, but this strikes me as outside marketing, not inside marketing. I bet if you did a blindfold, a blind test or whatever, that what they were doing this before. You know, they were teaching girls to be in. They weren't teaching girls to only make cupcakes and sew. They were teaching leadership, independence, and all of that stuff.
So you're making a really interesting observation, which is not that they're putting lipstick on a pig, right? It's not that they're trying to become something they're not, but that they were always this.
Yeah.
And are now just reclaiming
that. Well, they're just trying to convince the rest of us who have built up this negative stereotype.
Right. I actually liked it, and I think you should watch the ad. It's on YouTube, and it's inspiring.
All right, new Girl Scout. Uh-huh. Okay, so last time you were here, we were talking about the Million Woman March, or the 50 Million Woman March.
Booted off the mall.
Because they didn't get a permit
right.
in time.
Oops.
And so their plan was to, what, protest on Inauguration Day or the day after?
Day after.
Protest or make their presence known.
Exactly. I don't think they wanted it framed as a protest. It really was about saying, women are here. We're paying attention. There are issues that we really care about, and we're going to ensure that our voices are heard.
And so they've now found a spot, so they will be able to march.
Because there are more than 200,000 people now registered, or they're expecting 200,000. I think 140,000 are registered. It's going to be, I think, no matter what, a massive turnout. So the good news is that the update is the march is on. People are gathering at the intersection of Independence Ave and 3rd Street Southwest. It's a very specific location.
I'll meet you at the Taco Bell.
Right? It's fascinating. I don't know how they believe they're going to put all these women here, but they're saying 10 a.m. January 21st, and the march organizers really want people to know this is on.
Okay, and people can register, right?
They've got a website? There's a website, and I, you know, we can post it because I didn't write it down right here, but yes, you can register, and I think you should register. I think they really want you to not just show up.
Okay, we've got a couple minutes left.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, first of all, 3-day rule.
Yes.
Which is a high-end.
Are we talking about the rule itself or the new app?
I had no idea of the rule.
I knew you wouldn't, which is why I wrote you the note, because I didn't want. See, now I'm really trying to help you out.
I appreciate that. I'm not dating, but it says, what does it say? In addition to talking about the company, we can discuss our opinions on the 3-day rule itself. And I'm reading them like, okay, what is that?
Read the rest, because I told you what it was.
So it says you're not supposed to contact a potential date for 3 days?
That's the rule. That if you have
Is this a widely known rule?
Yes, that's why they named the new app the 3-day rule, Steve. So there's a new app that's out. What's fascinating about this is, first of all, that there is a new app. I mean, as if there aren't
a new
enough.
Dating app,
A new dating app. That this one is attempting to be more personal. They actually have live human beings if you pay the steep price of $3,500 for 3 months. It's in Chicago. But what's interesting about this one is that they're saying it's skewing upwards 25 to 65 because of that price point, and also aiming at people who are trying to take their dating more seriously, which is important for this time of year because the number one day of the year where people go on to dating sites is coming up.
I would have never guessed this.
Me neither.
It's the day, the Sunday after New Year's.
No matter when New Year's is, it's the Sunday that follows.
And why do you think that is? I have a theory.
My theory is that people have made their commitments for getting restarted in the new year. They probably go right back to work and dive in, and then they're home and they're lonely.
Right. So it's like, this is a new year. I'm going to have a date. This is going to be. So $3,500.
Yes.
I mean, it seems to me like if you've got that cash.
It's the, you know, you can't correlate having money with being happy and having found your match. So
no.
Maybe for some people, this is the investment that they would want to make, just like some people invest in weight loss programs or, you know, a new bag for their, you know, workplace. I think this is about them taking it seriously. But let's just talk for a minute about the three-day rule.
Okay.
So the idea is you have a date, things go well, and the theory is that you don't call the other person back for 3 days because that way you're sort of not...
Oh, that's ridiculous. That's a guy. See, things have changed so much from when men had to make the phone call.
No, not just men.
And
right.
Leave a message maybe or wait for someone to pick up.
Right.
Now it's instant. No, I don't agree with that 3-day rule.
So this, the 3-day rule would not apply to you.
I had a business call this morning, a travel call, and I haven't responded yet to thank and follow up on the call. I'm feeling like I'm a little negligent.
Already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that if you go out on a date, within a day or two, you should check in.
Can I tell you the truth?
Who's talking like the girl here?
Can I tell you the truth?
What?
I totally agree.
Really? Yeah.
Right?
3 days.
Look at us eye to eye on this.
Why can't you just be honest?
Right. It would really bug me, actually, if I knew that the guy was really interested, but then, like, played this game of waiting 3 days.
Right.
And I would never wait 3 days.
Okay, so there's two reasons why this dating app is not going to work. $3,500, and Suzanne and I agree.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well,
look at us.
I won't see you next week. Have a happy Hanukkah.
You too. Happy holidays.
When is it? Like Christmas time? It's around Christmas,
right? Christmas Eve is the start of it this year.
Okay, good. I'll come over.
Dang. Oh, that would be so awesome.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. this is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Steve Bertrand here on the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Here's to the Cubs. That was a Songfinch song right after the Cubs won the World Series. Now, you guys know, if you listen regularly, I've been talking about this Chicago company quite a lot in the past year. John Williamson is the CEO of Songfinch, and he's in the studio now. John, welcome to the Business Lunch.
How are you, Steve?
I'm great. Tell me about this idea, right? You just write a song for anyone who wants one. For anyone who'll pay for one.
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty simple, actually. You know, the idea started from this. I've been working in music for a long time, and the majority of that work came from working with brands and kind of leveraging the power of music for brands to tell stories.
So you were already, in a way, if a person is a brand, you were kind of already doing this or involved in this.
Exactly. So a brand tells a story, like, from one to a million, and this concept was, can you bring that down to a one-to-one level?
And so you decided that for what? It's $200?
It's $200.
For $200, you would write a personal song for someone that they then you give them the ownership.
Yeah, not me personally.
No.
I don't have fairly enough talent to pull that off. But we have a large community of artists that continues to grow every day. These are real artists, gigging artists, artists who write songs for a living, some of them, and some of them utilize music to supplement income.
And the beauty of it, too, is then you're actually helping artists, songwriters, do their craft. You're giving them a little side business.
For sure. It's one of the things that really powers us.
And so when did you start?
Songfinch itself launched in May of this year.
Okay.
And then we had a small beta phase that started in July. But then officially launching to the public was only October 18th. So we're coming on a two-month birthday here.
How are you doing in 2 months? I guess it's kind of a tough question to ask because it hasn't been long.
We're doing really well. We're doing multiple songs a day. People are really getting into the idea. There's this really big viral component around it. It's like hearing is believing. So
right.
The second you hear a song from somebody, they're the people that they share it with, they're like, I have an idea. I need something like that.
Well, and that's the cool thing. I was joking earlier about the narcissist who has it set on his clock radio, wakes up every morning to his own song.
Yeah, the majority of our songs aren't theme songs like that, but we've done a couple. It's been pretty
fun.
So
what are the majority of your songs?
They're all over the place. I mean, most everything that we do kind of centers around love mm-hmm. in some way or another, whether it's a husband to a wife to her kids,
let me ask you this.
A manager to his employees.
So, and he's hoping the employees to the manager write a love song too. I don't know if that happens, but is there an event that is dominant? I mean, are the songs mostly for birthday events or for weddings, or is there not one dominant that way?
It's pretty difficult to answer that because we're right around the holiday season, so the majority of things
now
are holiday gifts.
Right.
But yeah, we foresee it being pretty big in the wedding space. And
yeah. So if you are an engagement space, think of that. If you want to get engaged, present your fiance with a song. Wow, that would be a good one.
We've done a
couple.
Dude,
you're
going to
pray. You're going to make millions.
We've done a couple of those. One of the really good ones that we did was actually somebody wanted to announce that him and his wife were having a baby to their entire family. And they didn't tell anybody in their family. They got this song done, which talked about all like family dynamics and everybody within their family. And then the end of the last chorus basically said, hey, there's a baby on the way.
That's so cool.
And we got a video of it, and like the aunt is going crazy. And
okay, so let's do a little commercial for you then. So if someone wants to give a song for Christmas, do they still have time to do it?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
So the turnaround time, it's 7 days. So you go to songfinch.com. There's a pretty simple process in which it all is centered around this Mad Lib that starts the process. Say who you want to give a song for, what the occasion is, and how you want them to feel. And then you kind of pour out your feelings into this text box, personal stories, ideas.
And you can pick the sort of type of song, right? If you wanted salsa, you could get salsa?
You pick the feeling and the emotion that you want to give, and then we pick the appropriate writer to.
How often are songs rejected?
They're not.
No. Okay.
The quality control comes from us selecting the artists. And it's really interesting because you have this pride of authorship thing.
Sure.
So it's like when you give your information, you get a song about yourself. Like, it's really hard to dislike something that's singing about you or singing about your loved ones.
That's John Williamson, the CEO of Songfinch. I think really one of the coolest ideas to come out of the Chicago innovation world this year. And I'm seeing really big things for you. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, sir.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.